Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Do I have a speech or something prepared? I really don't. I'm just going to speak from the heart like I always do. What's going on right now is still so surreal to me. For some crazy reason, I believe like I'm going to wake up and it's going to be like game four all over again. I'm like, he down 2-1 still. I heard a lot of thank you, LeBrons, today. Thanks for coming home and thanks for keeping your promise, but you guys really should be thanking all the guys up here, to be honest. My brother, JJ, I seen a lot of things when there's like LeBron James makes 6 straight finals appearances. Well, James Jones made 6 straight as well. Dante Jones, we just picked him up. He's the luckiest man in the world, I'll tell you that. We just picked this up like 2 months ago. Having Mo back. You know, me and Mo had some unfinished business last time we was together in 09 and 10. J.R. Smith, you guys all heard the stories, false. Everything about J.R. is not a team player. You can't win with J.R. on your team. J.R. takes bad shots. Y'all heard them weak stories. But when our GM came to me and said that we had an opportunity to get J.R. Smith from the New York Knicks. By the way, the New York Knicks said it was just, J.R. was a throw-in, by the way. Yeah, we'll leave that to the side. But I would love to have J.R. Smith. Not only is he a hell of a three-point shooter, he's a hell of a defensive player as well, two-way player. Iman Shumpert, another guy that we got in that deal from New York. And this guy right here, or run through that, whatever the hell that is, that brick building right there, Shumpert run through it. Now, I don't know if he'd go head first because he loved his haircut. If it was a bear right here and it was Deli right here and I shot the ball and I was wondering who was going to get to the ball first, Deli would tear that damn bear up. Timo, another ex-Nick, but we leave that to the side too again. I looked at Griff, he said, he's a big training. I want to thank DeAndre Jordan. If DeAndre Jordan did not decide to go back to the Clippers, we wouldn't have RJ on our team. But I don't think he realized he was going to eventually be playing 35 minutes in finals games. And that's why he said he quit the other night. My little brother, Double T, who I've been taking care of since he was 17. Double T, you're amazing. They talk about someone being reliable. 390 straight games. That's reliable. Big Kev, Kevin Love, is so misunderstood. Everybody says, well, he's not a team player. He's not a winner. He doesn't do what it takes. And you guys saw his struggles throughout the finals. Everybody just burying him alive throughout the finals. And to be able to respond like he did in game 7, that's what real men do. And we talk about the shot. We talk about the block, but the stop, that was on a 2-time MVP. We got that stop, but I'm going to let that go. To young God, a.k.a. Kyrie Irving, a.k.a. Uncle Drew, Byrie, whatever y'all want to call him. This guy, he thought I was blowing smoke up his early in the season when I said he can be the best point guard in our league and also be an MVP in our league. He's only 24. He don't reach his prime for another 3 years. Thank you, Kyrie.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Wow. I heard quite a few more beep, beep than I really expected to, and then we probably really should have from yesterday's parade out in Cleveland, Ohio. That, of course, was the 4-time MVP and now 3-time champion LeBron James, putting the cap on an amazing week for the Cavaliers and for their fans with their parade yesterday that took way more hours than they thought it would because they got way more people out there than they thought they would. And you heard way more cursing than you expected you would from that stage at the end of that parade route. Welcome to the program on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Bob France with you until 5 o'clock. That's when you're going to have some drive time coming your way with Mr. Miller. Jim Cushlin is here as well. What's up, Cush?
Not too much. Yes, enjoying all of that from yesterday. The 1.3 million and just insanity.
I got to tell you, or at least I have to bring this up. I have to ask about it, I guess. There was more than just a little bit of online criticism, and even some TV folks out in Cleveland were critical, or at least not pleased with, let's put it that way, a couple of different things about the Cavs players' demeanor during that whole event. One of them was the attire. The fact that JR and Shump and I don't know who else out there was shirtless.
Well, JR hasn't had a shirt since Game 7 went final.
Yeah, well, I think they said since Vegas. He actually wore one. He actually wore one in Oakland after the game on Sunday. They did their stopover in Vegas. That's when he lost it, and he was not putting it on another one since. So whether that's true or not, that's how it was publicly anyway. But a lot of people, surprisingly, I don't know, maybe surprisingly, were quite critical of the attire, saying it didn't look representative of a championship team, saying that it didn't look necessarily crowd-friendly, that it looked a little more rap concert-friendly, if no other way to put it. And there was even some criticism on television there about LeBron's cursing. Because a lot of, first of all, there was 1.3 million people there. How many of them do you think were kids? You know? If 10% of them were kids, and we know it's much, much more than that, but what's 10% of 1.3 million? I believe it's 130,000, right? That's 130,000.
Breaking out the calculator right now, but.
Yeah, I mean, that's 130,000 kids. Okay, that's if it's the audience is 10%. Lord knows how many more watched it on TV. A lot of, Fox Sports Ohio is carrying it. Certainly all of the websites, not that you can't swear on the web, you certainly can, but, you know, people who are watching it just to get coverage there and not expecting to hear a bunch of F-bombs, there were people who were actually pretty critical of LeBron for not maybe recognizing where he was and how many people were around that might not be really appreciate hearing all the F-bombs that you bleeped out of that speech, and obviously that was an abbreviated version of the speech, but even in that abbreviated version of the speech, that's a lot of bombs.
And put you this way, in cleaning it up, because I was able to find the whole version that was uncut as it aired, about 12, 13 times I had to insert those, the little bleeps.
That's 13 times in the abbreviated version, so I wonder how many more there would have been. Not that the number actually matters, but my point is, you know, time and place. Know the crowd. Read the room, feel the atmosphere, and find out: should I be doing this? Should I really be up here bombing and bombing and bombing? Now, here's my question: A, does it bother you, anybody? I love your thoughts on it right now. We don't have a guest until about 3:35 when we talk NBA draft with Sean Corp, and I'm looking forward to that, by the way. Did it bother you at 866-240-1065 to hear all of that? From that stage, from, you know, the guys who were the toast of the town, the toast of the league, et cetera, et cetera. Does it bother you? And then secondly, with respect to the actual number of bombs and listening to his voice maybe being a little less polished than he normally presents, if the reason for the bombs, the F-bombs I'm talking about, and the really kind of just really laissez-faire attitude about language and who's around, and listening to the voice being a little less than polished, I don't want to say slurred, because it wasn't really slurred, but just less than normal. If it's because they had been liquid refreshing themselves from before the parade started all the way through the end, I kind of feel like LeBron was a little buzzing, a little tipsy, a little... not feeling any pain, so to speak, by the time he got that microphone in his hand. And I think that commercial LeBron, corporate LeBron, lifetime billion-dollar contract with Nike LeBron, contract with I don't even know how many different sponsorships he has anymore, that LeBron wouldn't have used bombs like that knowingly, because his rep and his image are on the line, and his sponsors or clients, whatever you want to call them, certainly, you know, the companies he endorses probably weren't really thrilled with that. I don't think that corporate LeBron was there, because I think Sipsy LeBron was there. That's what I'm thinking. And if it was that, certainly they have a right to imbibe as a grown man. He wasn't driving. He's not breaking any laws. You have a right to do that. But if that makes you a little bit out of control when it comes time to take the mic, does anybody have a problem with that?
I don't know. I've been thinking about that because I had heard some of that and, you know, figured as soon as I was listening to the speech later on yesterday, I figured there would be those who would have those issues with it. And, you know, I honestly, and maybe I'm just speaking for myself, I really don't care. I really don't. You want to talk about people doing things that shouldn't be? How about those people that were, like, literally scaling that building where one fall down five stories they go? Among other things from yesterday.
Yeah, that was crazy. And what was really crazy is the way the appearance of the buildings were, and with them in the crevices or whatever you want to call it, you know, rising up like that, it had a really, really strange and awkward WTC look to it. And it was just weird in that way. People on Twitter were pointing out, man, this is just creepy seeing that. You know, your team won a championship. Hey, put your life at risk. Climb up there in between these, cutout crevices, or whatever you want to call them, of this building, and prop yourself up there to be able to see this parade. And if you slip, like you said, Jim, you're down, and you're probably going down on other people. It's very dangerous. And I'm not going to get into all that because nobody did get hurt. The only people that got hurt, there was actually a gunshot, two gunshots, one individual for some reason. I still don't know what the story was. One juvenile female was shot, non-fatal, obviously. The individual who did it was caught. Other than that, there was no bad stuff going on in that regard. But I'm going to say this. Not that it matters to anybody, but I'm just, you know, I'm a dad. If you've got, say, that kid in that range, and I'm not talking about the 4-year-olds and the 5-year-olds, because they're not likely to tug on your sleeve and say, Daddy, what does fruit mean? You know? I mean, you might get that, but you can deal with that because they're young, real, real young kids. But if you've got that 8-year-old, that 9-year-old, that 10-year-old that you're trying to teach to be respectful, and he's got, you know, LeBron on his wall, and he's got the jersey, and he's got the King James hat, and he's got the shoes, or he's got the whatevers, and it's his idol, as LeBron is the idol, like Michael Jordan was an idol, and Dr. J was an idol, and so on and so forth. I go back to Dr. J because that was mine, growing up. He's an idol to millions of kids. And if you got that age kid who just idolizes him, and he hears him up there just effing this and effing that and bombing this and bombing that, I don't want to be the dad that's got to say, well, you don't understand, son. I tell you to never say that word because it is a really, really bad word. But he just won a championship and the rules just went out the window. You know, it's hard. It's, you know, are you plugging your ears, kids, when you're there? Plugging your ears, kids. Your kids' ears when you're there? Or are you just going to say, you know, well, he might have had something to drink, son? And, you know, when you drink certain kinds of beverages, they make you feel a certain kind of way, and you kind of forget where you are, and you say things you wouldn't ordinarily say. It's one of those things you just don't want to have to deal with. I guess that's all I'm saying. I'm not going to condemn. I'm not going to criticize. I'm not going to say he owes an apology. I'm not going that far. Just want to know if anybody, because social media, and like I said, at least one newscaster on TV kind of held him to account for that sort of portrayal, both the words and then for a lot of the guys, the way they were dressed or not dressed, looking like they were at a rap concert, quite frankly, not just presenting the very best of the organization, that sort of thing. That's what people are saying, and I want to know if anybody felt that way about it. So if you've got thoughts on it, at 866-240-1065. We're not going to spend all day on the parade. We spent all day yesterday on the parade because yesterday the parade took all day to celebrate that championship out there in Cleveland. With no rest for the weary whatsoever. By the way, no rest for the weary. Here we are. A day after a championship parade, it's draft night tonight. Everybody is looking to see how they can get better to catch now the Cavaliers. Last year to catch the Golden State Warriors. Maybe this year they're still saying we got to find a way to catch the Golden State Warriors. And I just find it odd that there isn't a lot of time in between championship, meaning Sunday's game, the parade a couple of days later, yesterday, and now it's okay, next season started already. Let's figure out who we're going to draft, see what we can get in the trade wire, or in trade deals, I should say, who we can claim as free agents and sign these guys, those guys. It's just so quick, and it's right on. It's like no time to even, you know, digest the championship. It's, you got to, 2016 is old news, man. You know, that's old news. You just won the title in 2016, but we're already working on 2017 right now. You better get your butt up on the big board and look at what you're going to do. I find that a little bit odd. I find it a little bit off-putting, too, to be quite honest with you. Not that it matters too terribly much to the Cavaliers because they don't have any picks in the first or second round. And the only way they would is if somebody called them and said, hey, we want to give you a high pick. We just want X in return, which may or may not be Kevin Love, if, you know, those kinds of rumors, you know, swirl around. But for everybody else, it's we're working on winning next year's title. You know, forget about this year's title. Again, it's old news. It's just one of those awkward things for me. I really wish it wasn't that way. I kind of wish there was about a good week or 2 week or maybe even a 3 week period in between championship and drafting for next year's championship to try to close that gap. But it is what it is. And it's to that end that we will get into the draft with Sean Corp from DetroitBadBoys.com coming up here in about 15 minutes. Sean, that's an SB Nation website, of course. We're going to talk about the Pistons' needs, I should say, and their prospects, the kind of individuals they might be interested in drafting drafting tomorrow. As a matter of fact, I tried to reference this yesterday, but I don't know if I actually got into it enough, but SI, I thought, did a pretty, everybody does it. Of course, there's a billion sites. ESPN's got it. I thought SI did a pretty good job of breaking down every team's needs. In addition to looking at the big board and looking at, you know, Ben Simmons and Brandon Ingram and Dragan Bender and Chris Dunn and Jacob Poeltl or whatever you want to call him and Jamal Murray, they did a really good, interesting look at even teams like the championship teams. Where do they need backup point guard help, front court depth, or whatever the case might be? So I want to read some of that with Sean and see what he thinks the Pistons can do about addressing those needs. Obviously, more NBA. The trades yesterday are big for the balance of power in the Eastern Conference. Jim Cushman coming into this past season. Mm-hmm. What did most people say? What team did most people that we talked to, including yourself, identify? Or what team did most people identify as maybe the Cavaliers' biggest challenger in their own division?
In their own division, I would have easily said Chicago. In terms of the whole East, I would have said Miami's in that mix too. I wouldn't have thought Toronto.
I kind of had a little bit of a hint on Toronto. I didn't think they'd actually finish second, just a couple of games behind them in the final standings. But I thought they'd be. But a lot of people thought that Toronto might be the team to beat if it isn't the Cavaliers. Or excuse me, Chicago might be the team to beat if it isn't the Cavaliers.
Right.
So the fact that Derrick Rose, the former MVP, is on his way to New York right now really, really says a lot about the balance of power in the Eastern Conference. We really, truly have no idea how this whole thing is going to play out, but the way it's getting started, sending Derrick Rose to the Knicks to play with Porzingis, and a word I heard earlier today, which I found very interesting, I cannot imagine in a million years it working, but I heard a potential acquisition by free agent signing today mentioned by John Sally, who was in for Golic on Mike and Mike in the Morning, a show you hear each and every day right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. I have to tell you that every time. John Sally was in today, and John Sally said, watch Dwight Howard. It would be a perfect place for him to be in New York. Now, as we look at the balance of power in the Eastern Conference, and we'll talk with Sean Corp about this as well, and you at 866-240-1065. You look at the balance of power there. The New York Knicks would have scoring machine Carmelo Anthony, former MVP Derrick Rose.
And that's a pretty easy, a nice deal for them because he's got 1 year left on his contract. So if it flame outs, no big deal.
It doesn't work. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Exactly.
If it does, they now have the bird rights and can give him a big contract.
Exactly right. So you've got former MVP and Derrick Rose. You've got the current free agent and former defensive player of the year and rebounding champion and shot blocking champion and everything else when he's motivated and he's right, Dwight Howard. You got the scoring machine, Carmelo Anthony, always good for 25 to 30 points a game in most seasons in his career thus far. And you've got a guy in Kristaps Porzingis who is just a tremendous player. In his rookie season, scored over 14 points a game, grabbed 7.5 rebounds on a terrible team, did not have a whole lot of people to pull defenses away from him. And despite all of those challenges, had in 72 games just a tremendous rookie year. You've got a potential big three plus one, if you think about it. I mean, remember, Carmelo Anthony has not had the career, obviously, coming out with LeBron James and Dwayne Wade that those guys have had as champions, but still regarded as an all-star player and, as I say, a scoring machine. Rose is a former MVP, and if he's healthy and not going to play the, well, I don't really want to play too hard because I don't want my knees to hurt when I go to graduation parties when I retire, if you remember that nonsense. If Rose comes back to playing Rose basketball, Howard buys in and Porzingis grows, that's a four-player component, nucleus, core, whatever word you want to use there, that could be a pretty doggone good basketball team. That is, if you look at all of them solely from a talent perspective.
Right.
And what they do and what they've done. Now, obviously, the flip side of that is Derrick Rose is a head case. Carmelo Anthony, if not a head case, isn't exactly a leader. He's just a guy that likes to go out there and get his, and he's really never expressed much of an interest in doing much more than getting his. Dwight Howard doesn't like playing with guys who are interested in just getting his, because he just played with James Harden, who was all about getting just his. And that did not work at all, because Howard didn't get enough touches, he pouted, he sulked. And then there's Porzingis, probably going to wonder, what in the hell am I doing here? I can't play with these guys. If they can find a way to harness everything, truthfully, the talent is there for that to be a very dangerous team next year in the Eastern Conference. But it's obviously, it's going to be a work in progress because the New York Knicks are a disaster. I don't know if Melo, Howard, Porzingis, and Rose, any of the three, and again, Howard, I just threw in there because they were talking about it today as a potential landing spot for Dwight Howard. I don't know if any of them can run the triangle offense. I don't know if they're going to run the triangle offense because Phil Jackson, the president, is going to kind of coach while not being the coach, if you will. Jeff Hornacek isn't a triangle coach, the new coach of the Knicks. We don't know how all of that would work. But I'm just saying that the three guys that I mentioned that we know are there, Porzingis and Carmelo and Rose, it's already a pretty good three-headed, you know, big three type of monster. At least that's how they'll refer to it. I don't think it's 100% accurate because I don't think Rose is what he used to be. And again, Porzingis is still very young, and Melo, we'll see. But if they were to add Howard, it is a very, very interesting team to challenge the Cavaliers in the East. Because that's what everybody's looking at now is, you know, how many in a row can the Cavs win? There's nobody in the East to challenge them. Well, the Bulls just got weaker. The Knicks just got stronger. Well, the Bulls probably got weaker. We got to look and see how this whole thing plays out. But the Knicks just got a lot stronger, and obviously there's a lot of free agency and trade movement involving another team that was a high-tiered playoff team for the Eastern Conference this year, and that is the Atlanta Hawks, who made the deal yesterday with Jeff Teague being moved to the Indiana Pacers. And
speaking of the Pacers, today they picked up Thaddeus Young for a couple of draft picks from the horrible Nets. So the Pacers have been very busy in the last 2 days.
They
were the seventh seed that took Toronto to 7 in that first round.
Yes, they did. That's an interesting acquisition. No question about that. And then the latest report, you know, forget about what I said about, John Sally mentioning Dwight Howard. The Kevin Durant sweepstakes is still on. And Kevin Durant, who's going to be a free agent, who could, of course, re-sign with Oklahoma City or could go to one of the marquee places in the league to claim the type of attention and status that he feels like he probably deserves. And what about the Knicks? Phil Jackson reportedly, and this is Ian Begley in ESPN.com today, this afternoon, literally about 15 minutes ago, just wrote that Phil Jackson told Derrick Rose after or during the trade process that is bringing him to New York, that they are going to push for Kevin Durant. So now you throw that name into it. I don't know how many shots you can find. How many balls are you going to play out there with Durant and Rose and Melo and Porzingis already? I don't know how many shots they have, but what I do know that they have is about $30 million in cap space, and they'll have enough money to offer Kevin Durant a max contract, which starts at $26.4 million in the first season. So as we look at next year's NBA, which is being built tonight starting with the draft, there's already some steps being taken for Eastern Conference teams to challenge the Cleveland Cavaliers.
And they're going to have to, these other teams in the East, like we're mentioning with the Knicks, they're going to have to make moves like that, because with LeBron basically saying, yes, he is going to come back to squash that whole thing before it really starts getting started, as we know from yesterday, Bob, it's going to take that kind of earth-shattering kind of move to really try to upset the apple cart at the top of the East, because and until that happens, Toronto's still a nice team. Maybe this works for the Knicks. Miami could still be a nice team, but they're just not on the Cavs level right now. They're just not. So you need these kind of earth-shattering moves if you're going to change the balance of power in that conference.
There's another balance of power shift that could be afoot in the Western Conference, FYI. Because I mentioned Kevin Durant, and earlier on I mentioned James Harden.
Yes.
Who likes to get his, as we say.
Of course.
James Harden is, according to Calvin Watkins at ESPN.com of about 20 minutes ago, the Houston Rockets are going to actively recruit Kevin Durant. Now that Dwight Howard is going to be gone, the malcontent, James Harden is going to be actively recruiting his former teammate with the Oklahoma City Thunder, saying, quote, at his annual youth basketball camp today, he said, I'm going to try. He's one of my really good friends, and I'm going to try and talk to him. He has a big decision to make. Whatever he feels best is for his career. I would obviously love for him to play here in Houston. But ultimately, he's got to make the best decision for his career, whatever that is. So here's James Harden, who left, by the way, Oklahoma City. Why? Because he was the third wheel of that big three. It was Durant and Russell Westbrook and James Harden. And Harden said, I want to be the man. So he went to Houston. He's averaging 29 points a game, taking tons of shots, playing no defense, but he's the man. Can you imagine now? He's saying, okay, I'll be willing to share man status. Kevin, KD, why don't you come out here and play with me in Houston? So just so many crazy developments here that are kind of rumored, some that are already ongoing, some deals that have already been made, obviously. And I don't know how it's all going to shake out, but I do know that there is no rest for the weary. And anybody, including the Golden State Warriors and Cleveland Cavaliers, who just finished their season 4 days ago, anybody who is not ready to jump into this is going to get very, very quickly left behind going into the 2016-17 season.
You know, you're
everybody else is just ready and raring to go.
You know, Bob, and thinking about this, yes, we both seem to agree that the way the calendar is structured for the NBA, that, you know, they shouldn't be having the draft 4 days after a finals ends. Flip side of that, I guess the one thing I'll partially appreciate, today's June 23rd. By July 23rd, we're going to know a lot of the answers to these questions we're asking right now.
You're right. You're exactly right. Oh, by the way, should I? How many headlines? I love ESPN.com. Don't get me wrong. And I love being ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. But how many headlines can that website run with the name Kevin Durant in it? I just gave you two. The Knicks, Phil Jackson, told Derrick Rose before he made this trade, we're going to try to get KD. We're going to push hard to bring him to Madison Square Garden, which, by the way, I could see happening. Then I just told you that the different writer at ESPN.com, literally all of this within the last 20 minutes or 25 minutes, okay, saying about Harden's going to recruit him for Houston. And here's Chris Forsberg, 3:12 p.m., so 22 minutes ago. Isaiah Thomas, Celtics definitely have a shot at Kevin Durant. Boston Celtics all-star point guard Isaiah Thomas remains focused on his recruiter role with an ultimate goal of luring free agent-to-be Kevin Durant to Boston. Appearing on Jason Terry's Runaway program on satellite radio on Wednesday night, Thomas was adamant he could make an intriguing pitch to Durant and plans to stay in his ear. So, I mean, how funny is that? There's the Laker rumor, of course, the staying in Oklahoma City possibility, the Spurs rumor, the Rockets now, the Knicks, and now the Celtics want to bring KD. And can I tell you this? Out of all of those, the one that makes the most sense to me is the one that brings him to a contender in the East. LeBron realized it a long time ago. Each time free agency came his way, he decided, I'm not going anywhere near the West. Why should I have to play Kawhi Leonard and the Spurs as often as they do out there and have to then beat them in the playoffs just to get to the finals? Why should I have to play Curry and the Warriors every single night and have to beat them in the playoffs? And, of course, the Clippers and, of course, the Grizzlies and the Blazers and who else is a beast out there anymore? I already said Spurs. The Mavericks? Why should I go do that when it's pretty easy pickings to get through the Pistons and the Hawks and the, even the Heat and these other weaker teams in the East. Okay, LeBron James figured it out a long time ago. He's not going West. Maybe Kevin Durant is figuring it out now. I got to get out of the West if I want to get to the finals and get my chance to do what LeBron is doing. I can't do it out there because I can't get to the finals every year. The grind is too tough to get to the finals out of the West. But Boston, they're a playoff team. Maybe he pushes them over the top. New York, they're not a playoff team. But with the names they're talking about putting together, maybe it's something he feels like he can do. I would not be surprised at all to see KD looking eastward. And if he does, that immediately changes the balance of power in the Eastern Conference for the defending champion, Cleveland Cavaliers. All right, we need a timeout. Let's talk about the NBA from a draft perspective, see what the Pistons are thinking about tonight, because we're going to talk to Sean Corp, who writes for DetroitBadBoys.com, a part of SB Nation, see exactly what positions they might be looking for. And before I do that, let me remind you, by the way, it is live right now. My Toledo Auction online at 1065theticket.com, the My Toledo Auction. It is live. It'll stay live until Monday at 11 a.m., a tremendous opportunity for you to go to that website, register. You do have to register, put in your name and email address, and then you can bid on great services and products from our partners and business clients that are giving you an opportunity to take advantage of their goods at pennies on the dollar. That's right. Just bid smart, and you could take advantage of everything from lawn equipment to home repair to spas and golf courses and gift cards to tremendous places, recreation centers. Like I said, there's a riding mower, a snapper riding mower, Galileo digital grand piano from Craig's Keyboards. I'm just looking at a couple of the items here online at 1065theticket.com. A $500 gift certificate to Storm and Norman's Mattress Outlet. That's the kind of thing you can pick up for a couple hundred bucks. Like I said, pennies on the dollar. Pair of Adirondack chairs from Myers Fireplace and Patio. You got to check it out. I can't read them all. It's crazy. But all of our great partners at Cumulus Toledo, check it out at 1065theticket.com. It's called My Toledo Auction. Register, bid, and save a bundle at the My Toledo Auction. We'll talk Pistons, draft, and more NBA coming right up after this on ESPN 1065 The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 1065 The Ticket.
Onward we roll. It is 3:43 right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. You're listening to the Extravaganza. Bob France here. Jim Cushlin always at my side, running the show for us, taking your phone calls, and we're going to get into some Pistons draft talk here in a moment. Before I tell you, or I should say after I tell you, about ways to save some money, especially when it comes to auto repair at LKQ Pick Your Part. You can bring your own tools and pull the parts you need right off the cars and save big. It's that easy. Parts from over 1,000 vehicles to choose from in a clean, organized lot at LKQ Pick Your Part. Find new inventory for your car or truck from transmissions to tires to rims to radiators. You name it. Visit LKQ Pick Your Part today. Find the parts you need. They're always buying used vehicles there as well. So that means if you've got a used vehicle for sale, get a great price on it. Sell it to LKQ Pick Your Part, 1-800-962-2277. You can save up to 90% on your auto repairs when you do the work yourself. At LKQ Pick Your Part, you're doing the work, so you enjoy the savings. Like to work on your car and save cash? Get to LKQ Pick Your Part. And remember, at LKQ Pick Your Part, all of our parts are always guaranteed, always. It's on Hagman Road, just off East Alexis Road in Toledo. LKQ, Pick Your Part. All right, let's bring Sean Corp in. Sean Corp, of course, does some great NBA writing for a great website. It's DetroitBadBoys.com, a part of SB Nation. And Sean joins us now to talk a little draft right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Sean, how are you, man?
I'm great. How you doing?
I'm good. It's been a long time since we've talked, but good to have you back on. I think we talked during the first round of the playoffs, did we not, during the Cavaliers and Pistons?
Yeah, that was a brief stay for the Pistons in the playoffs.
It's been a while. Isn't it hard to believe how long ago that was?
Yeah, that's why people say the playoffs are another season.
They really last quite a while. They really are. Jim Cushman brought it up yesterday. Cush, when did you say it started? Was it like April 17th?
April 17th was game one.
April 17th. It had just ended after, what was Sunday?
June 19th. So 2 months and 2 days.
Yeah, 2 months and 2 days. It really is a whole nother season, and what's really amazing, after they drag it out, Sean, is is now they're just like in some rush to get the next season started. Yesterday was a parade in Cleveland with the champions, and today it's draft time. Let's try to find the new champions. So do you like that, by the way, that they go so quickly? Do you think there ought to be a little downtime?
Oh, no, I love it. It allows my brain to focus on something else, especially as a Pistons fan who has not spent much time in the playoffs till this year. So.
Yeah, okay, and that's fair. If you are, you know, jonesing to get your team better and you can't wait for it to start so you can see what possibilities there are, I guess I can see that. I'm looking at it through the lens of a Cavs fan, as Jim and I both are, and you know, man, we just won a championship. Let us revel in it for a little while. Before we go looking for next year's champion by you know, free agency trades and obviously tonight's draft. So it's, I guess it's just a matter of perspective. So let's start with the 18th pick tonight. And we do want to talk about some of the stuff at the top. Obviously, the only two things that are sure are the top two picks. We know that Simmons is going to Philly and Ingram's going to the Lakers. After that, the Celtics are talking about moving the third pick. They're desperate to find somebody who wants it because there is no consensus third player. We'll get into all of that, but let's focus on Detroit and start talking about what kinds of position needs do you think they have first and foremost to be addressed in general with the offseason. It doesn't just have to be with the 18th pick tonight, but when it comes to trades, when it comes to free agent signings, et cetera, what positions do they need to address the most?
Well, there's two glaring needs, and Stan Van Gundy has been pretty open about it, a backup point guard and a more traditional power forward that has some size to defend the power forward position. But he's also said that he's going into this draft with a definite best player available mindset and that the needs of the team would have no bearing on who they select. So it's not a given that he's going to fill those in this draft.
That is a very interesting point to make because, you know, that's all, I think it's in every sport, really. But we talk about it in the NFL. Boy, they need a quarterback, but it's not the best player. Do they do it? So Stan's position here with the Pistons is we're going to take the best player, and if he happens to play the same position one of our best players is in, so what? I'll figure out a way to get them all on the floor.
Right. I mean, you're talking about drafting a rookie. You have 5 years of control. He's probably not going to be ready to contribute right away. So it makes total sense to go with the best player available mindset. And, you know, maybe that means there's a point guard there that makes sense, but it could also mean that they add to their stable of shooting guards and small forwards if that happens to be the person that the top of their board.
It's a good word, stable. You know, they are very deep there, so it would be interesting if they did pull a name out, and send it to the podium of a small forward or a shooting guard. Did you do a mock at all, Sean?
No, not on the site. We've kind of, at the 18th slot, and this year in particular, when there's really not much difference between, let's say, the third or fourth pick and the 25th pick, it's just throwing darts at the wall. So we're trying to stay informed on just about everybody.
Do you think that the Pistons are throwing darts at a wall?
No, I think that they have. I mean, they spent an astronomical amount to expand their scouting staff at both the professional and the college level. And they know that they want to keep track of just about every player in the game throughout their seasons. So I'm confident they have an idea of who they like and who they don't. I'm also confident that their list is probably very long. And so I don't think they're just expecting one or two players. Stan Van Gundy in a press conference the other day said that they were only confident that they knew that seven particular players would be off the board by the time they picked. So they have to have basically dossiers on a whole raft of players.
So essentially, by the time they pick at 18, right in the middle of this thing, a little bit past the middle actually, but by the time they pick, Pistons fans probably aren't going to be jumping up and down and saying yes, and they're not going to be going, oh my God, no. Because, I mean, I'm just judging by your description of there's not a whole lot of difference between the third pick and the 25th pick in this draft. So essentially, they were all kind of let's wait and see kind of things, right?
Yes and no. I think this might mirror a couple years ago when the year that the Pistons selected Kentavious Caldwell-Pope when Joe Dumars was in charge, everyone thought that they were going to pick Trey Burke because the team had a need at point guard. He was the local guy at Michigan. I think you might see something very similar among the fan base this year. when Denzel Valentine and perhaps Deonta Davis out of Michigan State could be available at that 18th pick. And if they pass those guys up for, let's say, a small forward or a foreign big man they've never heard of, I think you'll have the same amount of wailing among the fan base just because they want that local guy. They want the guy they know.
But how many times have we seen that fail? And I don't mean just Detroit and local guys from the Michigan area or whatever. But, I mean, in teams that where fan bases do that and they think they want the local guy, this is a great thing for us. And it just doesn't work. We see that all the time. You would think that, you know, and again, I don't want to just say have blind faith in Stan Van Gundy and he'll make the right decision. I'm not saying blind faith, but you would just think that they would trust. Look, if it's a foreign guy, just because I don't know him doesn't mean that Stan doesn't know him. Just because I haven't seen tape on him doesn't mean that he doesn't have hours of it and he knows that this is the right pick for me, a foreign big, that, you know, instead of Denzel Valentine.
Right. I mean, I think the same example applies. If you look at the careers of Trey Burke and you look at the careers of Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, KCP was the obvious correct choice at that position.
Amen.
But, you know, fans don't have 24 hours a day to obsess over this like maybe professionals do, or perhaps I spend too much time thinking about it. You know, they take the shortcuts, and the shortcuts are who's the guys that I've seen the most that I actually like. Right. And a lot of times that's your local player.
Sean Corp is our guest. Sean is a writer with DetroitBadBoys.com and Pistons official SB Nation site. Talking about the NBA draft, but beyond the draft, just perusing the site a little earlier today, Sean, let's talk about some non-draft acquisitions or possibilities to improve the Pistons, as everybody, of course, tries to now chase the Cavaliers after chasing the Warriors last year. And interesting piece on the ability of Mr. Horford from Atlanta. There's interest there, as you understand it?
That was reported out by ESPN, but I think obviously the Pistons would be in a very long line of teams that want to talk to Al Horford. Doesn't mean it's impossible, just means it's very unlikely, but he is sort of that perfect complement, assuming you don't mind that he's already 28, 29 years old, but he's a perfect complement for Andre Drummond as a guy who can shoot, defend, pass, and handle that power forward position at a near all-star level.
Yeah, well, he's been an all-star. Obviously, he was an all-star, I think, the last 2 years, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't he?
Yeah. You know, every year you get a year older.
Well, of course, yes. Yeah, I get that. And there's going to be a lot of teams, obviously, in the run, as you point out in the article. And I don't know if you didn't write it. This is Packy, whoever Packy is at your site. But quoting Mark Stein, that Orlando, Detroit, and the Lakers all are among the teams that are going to make a run. And then, of course, there's a possibility of a trade, too. And when you look at the Horford situation, Jim Cushlin, what was the deal yesterday, as we pointed out? And it was when Jeff Teague went from Atlanta to Indiana.
He went to Indiana. The 12th pick went from Utah to Atlanta.
And it was believed, according to what we were reading
yesterday. George Hill was the other piece involved in all that.
I can't remember who the other one was. And maybe you know, Sean, do you remember that deal from yesterday? Because they've got 15,000 names floating around in my head.
Yeah, it was George Hill that went to Utah.
That's right. George Hill goes to Utah, and then the 12th pick comes to Atlanta. And what we read yesterday was that Atlanta is going to want to move that pick rather than take somebody, because they just want to free up cash to be able to re-sign Al Horford to make sure that he doesn't go anywhere.
Right, and they also have a problem where they signed Kent Bazemore to a short deal, which means, this is very technical, but they don't have bird rights, which means they can't go over the cap to re-sign him, and he's
right.
Very good, so they don't want to lose him, so they have to create that space under the cap if they have any chance at all to re-sign him. So it's just one of those maneuvers that NBA teams have to do to deal with the bizarre rules of the NBA salary cap.
And what kind of cap space do the Pistons have?
Right now, if I remember correctly, the Pistons have, I think, 14 to 16 million under the cap, and that's accounting for Andre Drummond's cap hold and a couple other players. So they have basically enough money to enhance their depth at point guard and power forward, and if they were to try and get a player like Al Horford, it would necessitate some kind of trade. You'd be thinking a guy like maybe Jody Meeks and a pick would have to go out. Maybe they would just sell Tobias Harris and let Horford take his spot. But as far as cap space, you know, everyone this year has tons of cap space. That's why Detroit made that trade for Tobias Harris, because they knew they weren't going to be able to compete on a money level in the free agent market, so they wanted a known quantity. Yeah, so they've spent a lot of that cap space in that trade.
Now, Sean, as I keep thinking about this, too, and one of the themes we keep hearing is how this draft is kind of a shallow, weak kind of draft. That's why I can easily see Sam Van Gundy's opinion for tonight being best player available at that time, or mentioning cap things and all these other things. But at the same time, and you brought up a second ago his cap hold, which I imagine that number is going to change because it's the restricted free agent year. And we know, I think no matter what, top priority is making sure Andre Drummond is re-signed to a longer deal that'll be way more than what his qualifying offer of $4.4 million. What kind of ballpark, or first off, money-wise, are we talking here?
Well, so he agreed not to take an extension until after the Pistons spend their free agent money this year. Then he's going to get a huge raise. He will make, I think, in a five-year deal, between $120 and $135 million with his max extension, which the team has basically already said plainly that they're going to give him. Tom Gores has said that Andre Drummond's a max player. There's no way he's not getting it. So he's going to be an immensely highly paid player.
We're talking to Sean Corp of DetroitBadBoys.com, a part of SB Nation, talking about the draft. So we talk about their cap space. We talk about potential free agent targets, and we'll talk about draft picks. Now let's just talk about other guys. I'm just kind of curious, little thumbnail sketches, if you will, of some of the top names that are going to be going tonight, aside from the obvious top two that everybody knows about. A couple of names: Chris Dunn, Providence, 6'4", 220, tremendous guard, the best point guard available in the draft. Obviously nowhere near going to be around when the Pistons pick at number 18, but what do you think of Chris Dunn? What kind of an impact player do you think he'll be early on?
Early on, I think he'll defend well coming out of the gate. I'm not sure how well his offense is going to translate. He didn't light up the offensive categories, but he played in a very conservative offense at Providence. He didn't have a lot of great players around him, so I'm a little worried that he doesn't have that kind of dynamic game that you need at the NBA level with all the good point guards that can really break down defenses. That would be the only pause I have, but, you know, thinking long term, he's definitely a quality two-way point guard that's strong and has a great wingspan to guard the perimeter.
Any thoughts on another guard, Buddy Hield from Oklahoma? Which Buddy Hield is he? Is he the 23% guy he shot over a year ago, or the 46% guy from three that he shot in this past season? It's kind of hard to believe he's going to be that consistent at the NBA level. Deeper line, obviously, and making the transition that he did from one year to the next is incredible.
Yeah, and I would say that I don't think he's going to be a bum from distance in the NBA, but he's obviously not going to be 46%. That being said, he's probably not going to have a lot more to his game other than shooting, so he might just be that shooting specialist that hits maybe 38 to 40% every year. That's very valuable at the NBA level, but if he doesn't have the handle or the passing ability to do anything else, then he's not that valuable, and as a senior already, I'm not sure that I buy him as a top five, top ten pick, unless you're really down on the draft overall.
Is there anybody, despite your description before of kind of there's not much difference between number three and number 25, is there anybody up in the latter part of the lottery, or even the middle part of the lottery, worth trading up for? Not necessarily for the Pistons, but for anybody. Is there anybody where it's like, oh, if I get an opportunity to get up there at four or five, I really want Dunn or Jaylen Brown or even any of the foreign bigs that you had referenced before?
Well, I think I don't know about trading up, because usually that means you're trading a future asset, a draft asset, and that probably means that you're trading away from a even stronger draft. So this is more of a draft where I would want to trade down and see if I could get an additional pick. But that being said, there are players that certainly intrigue me, like Dragan Bender is very all-around intriguing. He can That score, was pass, and rebound.
I asked you about, yeah, the kid from Maccabee Tel Aviv. This is an 18-year-old, but he's been playing pro ball since he was 14. Is there any concern about that, by the way? You know, we talk about LeBron James. He's only 31 years old, but he's got so many miles on those legs because he came in at 18 and started playing 82 games right away, tons of minutes. This guy's been playing pro in some capacity since age 14. You just wonder, you know, how many miles anybody's legs have on them, you know, when you talk about a guy like that.
Yeah, but most of the overseas leagues play much shorter seasons, and younger players play very few minutes. So I wouldn't be so worried about the mileage.
Okay.
But
what about his ability, though? I mean, they say he's incredibly skilled and he can shoot. He's a 7-footer, but he's thin, obviously. He's 216 pounds, but they say he's got tremendous skills. What is it? I mean, is he a project?
I don't necessarily think he's too much of a project, but I also don't think. I think a lot of times when people think European big man and shooting, they think that he's supposed to be the next Dirk Nowitzki. He's not that. He's just a guy who's going to be able to hit his open shots. He's more like a, like if you think about Miles Turner last year for the Pacers,
okay.
A guy that could defend a little bit and could hit that open shot. That's kind of the trajectory you're hoping to see out of Dragon Bender.
Sean, we're out of time, but listen, since even though you said you did not do a mock, I'm going to ask you to do it anyway. Who, and we don't know who's going to be available, but just go ahead and say, if everybody is available, who you think the Pistons target and take at 18?
I am going to go out on a limb and say that the Pistons are going to pick Juan Hernan Gomez, who's an international player. He's like a prototypical stretch four who's really strong and can also rebound. He played in, I think, Spain last year. He's just one of those intriguing foreign prospects that not a lot of people know about, but he has sort of all the metrics of a guy who fits a Stan Van Gundy team.
One of your colleagues at the site says, no way Denzel Valentine is the ideal fit for the Pistons. Jason Brunskowski says that.
Yeah, Jason is also a proud Michigan State alum.
I knew it. No, there's nothing coloring his opinion there at all. This is 100% legitimate, no subject or object or subjectivity at all. But Denzel would be an interesting guy, again, if you are prone to go for that local connection. Really good stuff, Sean. Thanks for the insight, the analysis. You guys do a great job over there. You know what? After the draft takes place and we kind of see where everybody fell, and maybe even after we get into the real start of the free agency period, we'd love to have you back on. Sound all right?
All right, sounds great.
All right, man, we'd appreciate it. Thanks very much. There you go. That is Sean Corp from DetroitBadBoys.com, a part of SB Nation, talking a little NBA draft on the Pistons. By the way, Jim Cushion, I don't know if you saw it on the site, but Andre Drummond not going to be playing for Team USA
right.
in the Olympics.
Did
you
see
ask
that.
Me, and I know he's disappointed. You ask me, it's a blessing. I wouldn't be caught going to Rio if you paid me. No way. Not with all the problems they've got going on over there. You got people being jacked, Olympic athletes being robbed as they train over there. You got human feces in the water that the swimming and the other water competitions are going to be held in. You got all kinds of bacteria. You got the Zika virus. You know what? There's a reason why a whole bunch of people, including golfer Rory McIlroy, announced yesterday he's not going to play golf in the Olympics. He doesn't want anything to do with going to Brazil right now. I don't blame him, and if I'm Andre Drummond, I'm thinking, thank goodness I didn't have to turn y'all down because I don't want to go either. All right, we'll get into that and more coming up in hour number two right after this on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
They ask me, do I have a speech or something prepared? I really don't. I'm going to speak from the heart like I always do. What's going on right now is still so surreal to me. For some crazy reason, I believe like I'm going to wake up and it's going to be like game four all over again. I'm like, hey, down 2-1 still. I heard a lot of thank you, LeBrons, today. Thanks for coming home and thanks for keeping your promise, but you guys really should be thanking all the guys up here, to be honest. My brother, JJ, I seen a lot of things when it was like LeBron James makes 6 straight finals appearances. Well, James Jones made 6 straight as well. Dante Jones, we just picked him up. He's the luckiest man in the world, I'll tell you that. We just picked this up like 2 months ago. Having Mo back. You know, me and Mo had some unfinished business last time we was together in 09 and 10. J.R. Smith, you guys all heard the stories, false. Everything about J.R. is not a team player. You can't win with J.R. on your team. J.R. takes bad shots. Y'all heard them weak stories. But when our GM came to me and said we had an opportunity to get J.R. Smith from the New York Knicks, by the way, the New York Knicks said it was just, J.R. was a throw-in, by the way. Yeah, we'll leave that to the side. But I would love to have J.R. Smith. Not only is he a hell of a three-point shooter, he's a hell of a defensive player as well, two-way player. Iman Shumpert, another guy that we got in that deal from New York. And this guy right here, or one through that, whatever the hell that is, that brick building right there, Shumpert run through it. Now, I don't know if he'd go head first because he loved his haircut. If it was a bear right here and it was Deli right here and I shot the ball and I was wondering who was going to get to the ball first, Deli would tear that damn bear up. Timo, another ex-Nick, but we'll leave that to the side too again. I looked at Griff, he said, he's a big ain't he? I want to thank DeAndre Jordan. If DeAndre Jordan did not decide to go back to the Clippers, we wouldn't have RJ on our team. But I don't think he realized he was going to eventually be playing 35 minutes in finals games. And that's why he said he quit the other night. My little brother, Double T, who I've been taking care of since he was 17. Double T, you're amazing. They talk about someone being reliable. 390 straight games. That's reliable. Big Kev. Kevin Love is so misunderstood. Everybody says, well, he's not a team player. He's not a winner. He doesn't do what it takes. And you guys saw his struggles throughout the finals. Everybody just burying him alive throughout the finals. And to be able to respond like he did in game 7, that's what real men do. And we talk about the shot. We talk about the block. But the stop, that was on a two-time MVP. We got that stop. But I'm going to let that go. It's a young guy. A.K.A. Kyrie Irving, A.K.A. Uncle Drew, Byrie, whatever y'all want to call him. This guy, he thought I was blowing smoke up his early in the season when I said he can be the best point guard in our league and also be an MVP in our league. He's only 24. He don't reach his prime for another 3 years. Thank you, Kyrie.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
I got to give it credit, Jim Cushland. I mean, seriously, day after day, montage after montage, they just seem to get better. And I'm not saying that to challenge you, like this one's got to be better than yesterday's, because you've had a lot of great material. You know, championships, montage with the playoffs, you know, obviously the speeches at the parade, all of that stuff. It's, you know, it gives you a lot of great material to work with. But, man, while you have that material, really, really enjoyable stuff. Thanks, man.
No problem. And you know, we were talking last hour about that and, you know, the people who are upset at the dress.
Now that his voice is fresh in your ears again, you've started again, am I right or am I wrong? Do you hear, like, a little bit of different tone to LeBron that he wasn't on his sharpest game, that maybe just a little bit of imbibing may have impacted a little bit of his speech
If it was that, then they certainly did that before the parade start getting delayed, because I don't recall seeing any beverages of any kind during that long, long parade that got delayed.
I would be stunned if they hadn't been doing it before, and if they weren't doing it during.
I'll agree with that.
To be honest with you, you know, I mean, maybe it's a water bottle on the outside, but whatever. Because, you know, again, watching and listening to J.R. Smith, too, who hasn't had a shirt on since Vegas, I don't think he probably has stopped drinking since Vegas either. And that's not – I'm not trying to accuse – he's a grown man. None of these guys are doing anything illegal.
Right.
I'm not talking about anything bad. They're not driving. You know, they weren't driving the parade floats, right?
No.
They're just being celebratory, happy guys. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm just saying that I wonder if LeBron's judgment was impaired a little bit by a little bit of a liquid refreshments, because, again, corporate LeBron always
is
in control.
He was not there yesterday.
He's always in control, is he not, of his voice?
Pretty much. And corporate LeBron was nowhere to be found amongst the 1.3 million yesterday.
Corporate LeBron would never let his sponsors hear him talking in those terms in front of 1.3 million customers who are going to buy his stuff. And, you know, Lord knows how many of them are kids. Like I said, if it was 10% kids, that's 130,000 people.
Yeah.
If it was 20%, you know, and go on and up from there. How many? If it was half kids, talking half a million people or more who are killed kids who want to buy LeBron stuff that he's teaching the F-bomb to over and over and over again. I don't think corporate LeBron was there. I think that was, how shall we say, liquidly refreshed LeBron. That's all I can think of. It's the only, you know, and anyway, like I said, I'm not going to kill him for it. Absolutely
right.
Me either. No, but I do understand some people who criticized. And it was on Twitter, and it was on social media, it was on TV in Cleveland. They had at least one news anchor that I saw online that was pretty critical of the, hey, you know what, we don't need that language on a great day for the city and a great day for the franchise, et cetera. So anyway, I know I interrupted your point.
That's all right, you know, because what's interesting to me is because, for understandable reasons, people are hung up on that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Forgetting the because it was very interesting. He went down the line of everybody, even guys like Sacha Cowan, who did not play and who may have a bigger role on the team off the bench next year if guys like Mozgov aren't there. He goes by and thanks everybody. But more importantly, it overshadows the wonderful digs he took in there, the multiple digs at the Knicks, the thanking DeAndre Jordan, which is pretty true. That's how Richard Jefferson ended up on the Cavs. He was fully ready to stay with Dallas, and then the whole DeAndre Jordan circus last summer happened. And then the dig at Curry when he was talking about Kevin Love. The complaints about his language and the attire overshadows, to me, wonderful, wonderful digs that were out there.
Well, there's something you're missing, though. You're right, by the way, about all that. But the one thing that you're missing, he went through every guy on that roster, and didn't he also hit Ty Lue?
Yes, I believe so. I had to cut some things out.
and he hit David Griffin.
Yes.
I didn't hear the entire speech start to finish, but I was told that it was very, very conspicuous by its absence, any reference at all to the owner, Dan Gilbert.
Right, yep.
Did you hear the entire thing start to finish?
Yes, I have listened to the.
Is it true he did not mention Gilbert at all?
He basically did not mention Gilbert. Yes.
Think about that for a moment. I mean, I'm not trying to start anything here. Obviously, things were already started. LeBron left, did the decision, didn't even have the courtesy. This is one of the reasons I was so down on LeBron for all those years he was gone.
And part of the reason Gilbert wrote that infamous letter now 6 years ago.
That's where I'm going with this. He didn't even have the courtesy of giving Dan Gilbert the heads up, saying, Dan, I just want you to know, thanks for everything. I am going to move on. I'm not going to announce it until this TV show that we're doing, but I want you to know personally for me, thank you for everything. It was one of the reasons why Gilbert was so incensed and so furious, because there's no way this guy is going to go on live television and make this big decision announcement and not stay here unless he tells us he's going. He's not going to make us find out that he's leaving us on live TV, right? It just doesn't happen. And that's what he did. And, again, I'm not trying to kill LeBron for this anymore. This is, you know, obviously the past. And you think, you would expect that bygones are bygones and all is forgiven because he agreed to come back and take more max money from Dan Gilbert to come back and rescue his franchise and do what he just did, win a championship. So all is fine with the world. LeBron's sorry for the clumsy, clunky decision. Dan Gilbert has expressed regret for the letter. He has said, if I had it to do over again, obviously I wouldn't. I wrote from a very emotional, angry point of view, and it just all came out, and there it was. He says he regrets it. So you think that means we're good now. It's all good in the hood. I did something bad. You did something bad. But we're teammates and partners now. Not teammates, but we're partners here in this franchise. And I didn't see hugs. I didn't see, complimentary words from one guy to the other. In fact, I'm going to try to remember this now. But in the post-game trophy presentation, when they gave the trophy to Dan Gilbert, the owner, which is normal,
right?
And Dan Gilbert spoke for just a short while. Did he mention LeBron?
You know, I'd have to go back and review the tape, if you will, on that one, because I'm thinking no, but I can't say that for certain sitting here right now. I'm going to have to go back to the tape now that you mention it.
Dan Gilbert, I don't think he mentioned his MVP in the post-game remarks. He talked about how much he loves Cleveland, about how much he loves the franchise and the fans, and this is for you, and blah, blah, blah. I don't think he ever mentioned his MVP. Now, it might not be a big deal. Now I got to go back and think, okay, when the Broncos owner got the trophy, did he mention Von Miller? Did he, you know, in the Super Bowl? It did when the Warriors won last year. Did their owner, you know, mention the MVP Iguodala specifically in his post-game remarks or his trophy presentation remarks? So maybe it's just not a big deal. But I don't think Gilbert mentioned LeBron. And I know for a fact that LeBron didn't mention Gilbert, despite specifically mentioning everybody else, from every player on the roster to the GM to the coach. About the only two names he didn't mention are David Blatt and Dan Gilbert. Unless I'm mistaken, I think that's true. So it's really weird. Maybe the two of them have just agreed, I hate you and you hate me, but we're going to play and we're going to do this thing. You keep paying me what I need to be paid, which is the max amount. And Gilbert may be going, okay, you keep playing the way you are, and I got no problem with that, and we'll win championships together, and just agree not to really spend much time together.
And if that's the out of the public view, quote unquote agreement they have, that's fine, because clearly they still don't like each other, and I don't think that's going to change.
I don't either, but it's just weird, man. You know, it's just weird. Normally you see Tom Brady hugging Bob Kraft. Normally you see, you know, Peyton Manning hugging Pat Bowlen. You see the owners and the star players, man, I love you. I love you. I don't ever want you to leave. You know, you're my guy. You're our city's guy. You're my franchise guy. You're the face of us. You know, it's just how it is. But I think based on yesterday and literally naming everybody but his owner, that LeBron James was specifically kind of trying to say, I still can't stand that SOB. I can't believe he said all those things about me. He swore he'd win a championship before I do. Then he got 4 years of suckitude while I won two of them over there in Miami, and it took me coming back here to get him one. This guy can bite it. You know, that's kind of what I heard.
But as you said, as long as, you know, LeBron goes out and plays and Gilbert signs those checks, I don't think LeBron will say anything, though.
No, they won't. But it's like I said, it's what he said by not saying anything. You know, and I just find it very, very unusual. And I wonder if there will be a point in the next year, 2 years, 3 years. Obviously, he's going to opt out of his current deal, then sign the new max, which is going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $30 million.
Right. The only question is it going to be another one of those one-and-ones that he's been doing last year, or it's going to be like a 3-4-5-year deal?
The only reason he was waiting, obviously, with the one-and-one is because they knew that the cap was going to expand in a big way this coming year, which it is, and that's why he didn't want to take last year's match.
Actually, the things I've been, you know, kind of reading from ESPN and others are that this might be the last. There's a possibility that this might be the last of the one-and-ones because there's something involving extra TV money with the CBA and things for next summer as well. So I my personal hunch, Bob, it's going to be one more of those one-and-ones, and then we'll be right back here next year.
I don't think so, because I think, like I said to you yesterday or on Tuesday, I think, you know, I mean, look, there's a lot of very intelligent lawyers and accountants who work for these guys as agents, and it's probably not very difficult to say, I'm signing a five-year max deal, $30 million a year or whatever. If there is a new TV agreement that raises revenue significantly that we have access to, then I get the max of those dollars, too.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, looking at the calendar, July 1st is the beginning of the new calendar in free agency. Players can't officially, July 1st, that's next Friday.
Yeah, a week from tomorrow.
Right, and then players and teams can't officially ink the dotted lines until Thursday, July 7th. So we'll know soon enough.
But I think that's what he'll do. I think it'll be a long-term deal, and there'll be a clause in the contract saying if any extra money is suddenly available to the players by way of a TV deal or something else that raises salary caps or salary maxes, then I get it. And Dan will sign on it in Comic Sans font and be fine and ready to go.
Honestly, I bet the two contracts with blanks for names and signings and things, and sign your name, are already printed out. It's just a matter of which one is he going to sign. I think they're already printed out, to be honest with you.
Well, yeah, I'm sure. But I think that's how it's going to go down. All right. It's just weird. Like I said, at any point in the next 3, 4, 5 years of the max deal he's going to sign, I wonder if it will ever soften. I wonder if they win another one. If there's one of those, everybody else does it, embraces between star and owner on the podium as the trophy presentation is happening, especially if it's an MVP. If they happen to win another one next year or the year after, whatever. I just wonder if it will ever soften or if they will always look at one another with daggers in their eyes. Gilbert looking at him and saying, you're still a mercenary SOB after what you did to me. And LeBron looking at him and saying, you're still just a punk who couldn't do a thing without me. I own you. Without saying it. Just with the look and the feel.
Right.
I wonder if that will ever go away. Let's go to Steve in Toledo. Steve, you're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hi, Steve. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing pretty well, thanks.
What's on your mind?
Enjoy listening to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to weigh in on the Gilbert and LeBron thing. After the game Sunday night, Dan Gilbert did mention LeBron.
He did or didn't?
He did.
He did. Okay, then I missed that part. What did he say? Do you recall?
Yeah, it was something like, this is for LeBron James and this team.
Okay, and, so he actually specifically made sure to point him out then.
Yes, he did. He was the only player that he pointed out. He mentioned the team and he mentioned LeBron. And actually, Mike Greenberg this morning alluded to the same thing.
That LeBron did not mention him at the parade yesterday, you mean?
Yeah, they were talking about the fact that LeBron didn't mention Dan Gilbert.
Okay.
But he also mentioned that Gilbert had mentioned LeBron in the post-game.
Okay, so then the answer to our question is, I say I didn't hear that part of the show today. I heard John Sally, like I said, talking about rumors and so on with Dwight Howard and everything, but I must have missed this part. But I think we have our answer now then, that if there is to be a softening, it's going to have to come from LeBron because Gilbert is already willing to patch everything up and say, guys, we're all working together now. He not only brought him back, he paid him, and he's going to pay him even a lot more. And he thanked him and said, this is all for LeBron or from LeBron or however he worded at the dais or at the podium after the championship. And then LeBron, when given an opportunity to return it and saying, you know, congratulations to Dan Gilbert. He's fought so hard. He did what had to be done to put this team together. We had our differences, but we're all together now. He had a chance to do that and specifically snubbed him is what it sounds like.
Well, yeah, I don't really necessarily think that's true. I think there's the possibility, at least, and I think it's actually more likely, that LeBron was in front of 1.3 million people, clearly did not have a script. And while he didn't say Gilbert's name, I'm not sure that was intended to be a barb or something thrown at Gilbert. It could easily just have been an oversight or whatever.
He mentioned Sasha Khan, for crying out loud. You know, and he mentioned, you know, the other non-players like Ty Lue and David Griffin, the GM. I find it odd, you know, that the one thing he would have a slip or not a slip, what'd you call it?
He clearly left him out. I mean,
that's what I mean, that it wasn't just an oversight. I mean, because if he was thinking without a script and was managed without a script to remember everybody else's names, I can't believe he wouldn't mention the owner, the guy who, you know, at the trophy presentation you mentioned that Greeny was talking about today, the trophy is first handed to not Ty Lue or LeBron James, but to the club owner. I can't believe
he
just would have forgotten about
it. Right. I'm just saying I don't think that chances are good that it's as bad between them as you're suggesting.
Okay.
I think if LeBron was that hostile towards Gilbert, I think it's more likely that Gilbert wouldn't have said anything to him either. It just doesn't seem to me that if things were really hostile between them, that Gilbert would have gone out of his way to say anything to LeBron either. I don't think relationships really worked out.
Unless it's just a one-way street, you know? I mean, unless Dan is like, hey, you know, look, I've already said I'm sorry for the letter. I've already apologized publicly for it. I've expressed regret. Maybe he apologized to him personally when they negotiated their, you know,
maybe he did.
And maybe it's just LeBron who has just kind of still got that burr under his saddle that says, you know what, man, you said some things there that were too personal, and no, I don't accept the apology. Maybe that's how it is.
Well, yeah, except that LeBron wouldn't have had to come back. If he felt that strongly about it, as you're saying, he wouldn't have had to come back. He could have gone anywhere he wanted to. Anywhere.
That is true, except for two things. One, the lure of Akron, Ohio, which he has often made mention of. That this
very clear. Yeah,
you know, it's very, you know, his home is in Bath, which is for those who don't know, in Northeast Ohio, it's closer to Akron than it is to Cleveland. It's you know, even during his first run here from 2003 to 2010, when I say here, I mean in Cleveland, he often left out when he would do interviews. Cleveland. He would talk about Akron. That's his place. That's his home, not Cleveland. When they would talk about his hometown of Cleveland, he would correct people and say, I'm from Akron.
Yeah.
And it seemed like there was almost a almost a specific intention of saying, I am not a big fan of Cleveland. I'm a big fan of Akron. This just happens to be the closest team to where I'm from. And so that lure of getting back to Akron is, of course, you got to play in Cleveland to do that. There's nobody else, nowhere else closer. So that's part A. Then the second part is, do not underestimate the power of the wife. When he married, his longtime girlfriend Savannah and came back up here. Believe me when I tell you this, and I can't tell you how I know this. I'm just telling you that I know this. I'm not making this up. She was a huge, huge part in the push to leave Miami and come back to Cleveland. Mm. And so that wouldn't be a case where he could have just gone anywhere. I mean, yeah, he could have as a player, but if he wanted to keep his family together, that there is an impact of that.
Or at least
of
keep
that
it.
Sort. I'll say it that way.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I think that probably, for my money, the relationship between LeBron and Dan Gilbert is probably cool at best. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably understandable, and it'll take some time if it ever does. I who knows if they'll ever become buddies or anything like that.
Do you ever work with somebody, and I don't know what you do for a living, but do you ever work with somebody that you couldn't stand and he couldn't stand you, but you knew you had to work together, so you just kind of had a cool relationship where it's like you acknowledge each other, how you doing,
right,
and then go on about your business?
Right, and that's what I think this is.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that it's so hostile, or else I think it would come through more. I think you would see more signs of that than this, than leaving him out of the speech yesterday.
Did you hear him? Hold on, Steve. I'm going to ask you one more question. I got to get out.
Yeah.
Did you hear during the transition from Blatt to Lou, when LeBron did interviews on it? Because as you know, he was accused of being, I accused him. I said he has a big role in it, no doubt about it. His public disrespecting of Blatt is pretty clear, and those are the kind of things that give you an idea that he helped push him out. So he was asked about those things, and he talked about he denied that he was responsible, et cetera. But do you remember in any of his responses, did he talk about Dan Gilbert then? Because Dan Gilbert is the owner, and David Griffin is the GM, and they're the ones who make the decision on hiring and firing coaches. Did he mention ever having conversations with Gilbert about any of that?
I don't remember him saying anything about that. All I remember LeBron saying at the time was that it was not his decision to make or something like
that.
Yeah,
I know he definitely said that. The only reason I'm asking is because I honestly think that might be the only time that he would ever have cause to mention the name of Dan Gilbert, the fact that there was a coaching change. And if it wasn't then I'm going to go ahead on a limb here and say that from the time he signed on the dotted line and actually had the press conference that said he's home or back, I don't think he said the name Dan Gilbert since, including at this championship time in that parade yesterday. I don't think he's ever said his name since then. And I think that's a pretty good indicator that they're willing to work together, or at least LeBron's case, he's willing to work for the guy and with the guy and take his money and win games for his franchise. But that's the extent of what their relationship is ever going to be.
Yeah, it may be. That may be. It's, I just think that they probably have a working agreement, that it's not really hostile, but it's certainly not close. I mean, that seems really abundantly clear.
It is hostile behind closed doors, and maybe you just acknowledge by the two of them that they have a gentleman's agreement and a pledge that we keep that here. None of that stuff goes public. You know what? Let's just work together and do this thing, and let's not let anybody else know anything different. That might be how it is. So.
Yeah, and I think if that were the case, you would have to take that approach.
Oh, yeah.
Because
you
would have such a negative impact on fans. It would have negative impact on team chemistry. And
oh, gosh, yeah. And then especially if you start playing poorly, you know, as a team, if you get into a losing streak, people are going to say, they just can't work it like this. I mean, the players and the owners don't even like it. It would. It would have a very, very negative impact, and that's why they would never let anybody know that. Hey, Steve, I got to run, buddy. Great call. Thanks for the insight. It's just kind of interesting, only because it's so unique. Jim, I obviously could be wrong. I don't have hours and hours and hours of tape that I can go through about every interview LeBron has done. Has he ever said the name Dan Gilbert since he came back and re-signed? But I don't think he has. I think the only time that he would have had a reason to, you know, because nobody consults the star player in interviews at practices or after games, you know, when the media availability is there. Nobody consults him and asks him about the owner. They ask him about the opponent, the last game, the offense, the shot, what the thinking was on that possession, why they've lost two in a row. They don't talk about the owner ever unless there's something involving the owner, which is why I brought up the changeover from Blatt to Lou. And if you didn't say anything then, and then the only other time the owner's involved is right now, you just won the championship. If he didn't identify him, then I don't think he said the name in it essentially over a calendar year then.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure if he has either now that you're making me think about it. And it's clear to me that this is just going to be one of those rocky at best relationships for the duration. And
which is fine, I guess, right? They just won a championship with that rocky relationship. I'm not saying that they have to change it.
And at the end of the day, I don't think LeBron will do anything rash as long as the contracts get signed and Dan Gilbert doesn't say anything stupid. Honestly, right. As long as the checks get signed and nothing stupid comes out of Dan Gilbert's mouth, I think LeBron will just ignore it.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree. I pulled this up while we were talking. I just want to play it real quick. This is Dan Gilbert at the podium, or whatever you call the makeshift stage after the championship this past Sunday night, being interviewed by Doris Burke. I just want to play this. I'm actually playing it blind or without having previewed it or listened to it, so we'll figure this out together.
Why?
Come on in, RJ. Come on.
People of Cleveland deserve this more than any people I've ever seen or met or felt, and thank God that God loves Cleveland, Ohio. He does, and I want to thank everybody. Thank David Griffin in the front office, Ty and the coaching staff, everybody in the entire franchise, the best fans in the world, and LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Well, that trophy found an appropriate person to carry it. When LeBron left in the fashion he did after the first time, could you have ever envisioned him returning and fulfilling this dream?
I couldn't hear you exactly, Doris, but I all I know is that no group deserves this more, no fan base deserves this more, and I'm speechless and proud of everybody. It's like a fantasy for everybody, and thank you, Cleveland. Love you, Cleveland. And thank you to the Golden State Warriors and Joe Lacob. Your class act, and it was a great series. Great series. Thank
Congratulations.
You.
There it is. There it is. Jim, did you notice it, or is it just me? Maybe I have rabbit ears. Yes, he said. He thanked David Griffin and Ty Lue and the entire crew. First, of course, he said it's for the city. It's for the fans. Nobody else deserves it more. Then when he got around to the players, he just said LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers players. And then when she said, when he left and things went the way they did you ever imagine that he would come back and lead you to this moment? And Dan Gilbert's response was what?
Pretending to not hear the question. I know it's pretending because that went over the loudspeakers at Oracle. That's why there was an echo in the whole thing.
So do you think he
heard
it
all right? Oh, he heard it.
That's what I'm saying. And he chose
to not answer that question.
Rather than to address that, the part about LeBron coming back, he chose to say, I didn't really catch that, Doris, but you know what? I really think this is just a great night for everybody, blah, blah, blah. So he said LeBron almost out of obligation when he said LeBron and the players. And then when asked specifically about LeBron coming back, and this is more of a question, if you think about what Doris Burke asked him, it's more of a question of, are you guys good now?
Yeah.
By saying, could you ever have imagined him coming back and then leading you to this moment, or however she said that, it's kind of like, you know, you guys had that terrible parting. Now you're together. Are you guys good now? It was almost a question of your relationship status.
Yeah.
It was like a Facebook. All right, put your status here. I'm not kidding. And rather than answer it, he said, I didn't really catch all that, but I'm just proud of everybody. And let's thank the Warriors, too.
Honestly, I haven't reviewed that part of the quote-unquote tape since Sunday.
Well,
I've watched the last
play.
Review
it again on
again.
Live radio.
Deserves this more. No fan base deserves this more. And I'm speechless and proud of everybody. It's like a fantasy for everybody. And thank you, Cleveland. Love you, Cleveland. And thank you to the Golden State Warriors.
Oh, hold on. I didn't back up far enough. Hold on.
Thank everybody. Thank David Griffin in the front
office.
Here
we go.
Ty and the coaching staff. Everybody in the entire franchise. The best fans in the world. And LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers.
I mean, that's it. That's all you got. Just LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Nothing emotional. Nothing overly, thank you for coming back. Come come over here. Give me a hug. You know, thanks for letting bygones be bygones. All the water under the bridge, blah, blah, blah. He didn't give any of that. Just, you know, David Griffin, Ty Lue, and LeBron James and the Cavaliers and the city of Cleveland were done. And then the follow-up.
Found an appropriate person to carry it. When LeBron left in the fashion he did after the first time, could you have ever envisioned him returning and fulfilling this dream?
When he left in the fashion that he did.
Right.
The first time. So that's a clear question from Doris Burke. Remember the decision? That's what she said to him on the podium. Remember the decision? Could you ever have imagined after the decision him coming back here and leading you to this, whatever she just said, this glory or whatever it was? It's pretty clear. He heard her fine before, but suddenly...
I couldn't hear you exactly, Doris, but all I know is that no group deserves this more. No.
And then I'm not going to talk about him anymore.
And again, you hear that slight echo in the background because that goes over the loudspeakers at Oracle, like all these presentations at the end of these championships for any of the sports do. It goes out to the whole stadium.
He heard it.
He heard the question.
And yet he came back. He said, I'm not going to talk about him anymore. I already said his name once, and now I'm just going to say the group, the whole group did such a great job. I mean, it was pretty doggone obvious to me.
Couldn't hear you exactly, Doris, but all I know is that no group deserves this more, no fan base deserves this more, and I'm speechless and proud of everybody. It's like a fantasy for everybody, and thank you, Cleveland. Love you, Cleveland. And thank you.
And now I've run out of things to say about Cleveland, and I'm not going back there again, so the Warriors, they're a class act. I'm telling you, and I'm not trying to start trouble because, again, it doesn't matter. They won a championship. I'm not trying to start trouble, but I'm just going to go out and say what I think I hear. These two guys still can't stand each other. Even Dan's referencing LeBron there, but his refusal to go into any detail about him shows this is still not copacetic between them. And then LeBron listing every player on the roster, including bench players who never saw a minute of action in the playoffs, like Sasha Khan. He talked about Dante Jones for 4 minutes, it seemed, for crying out loud. Talked about James Jones for 4 minutes. And then I'm exaggerating the minutes, but you get the point. And then he got to the front office and the coaching staff,
yep.
Griffin, Lou, and then stopped. That's it. Not going a step further.
Dude, you know, and I can't remember if he mentioned, I don't think he mentioned Blatt at all, which means outside of Gilbert, the only people that were sort of part of this team that he didn't mention were Blatt and Varejão.
And I won't blame him for that.
Right, because they're not no longer with the team, so that's fine.
But I mean, it would have been a really classy thing to do. And again, this is not on LeBron. I'm not criticizing LeBron saying he's not classy. Any one of the guys who spoke, anybody at any point, could have said, you know, thanks as we give our thanks to the entire franchise. Could have said, and also, by the way, thanks to David Blatt, who got this season started off halfway through and put us in really great shape.
And when I was reviewing this all,
for us to be able to bring it home.
Yeah, and when I was reviewing this all again earlier today to cut it up for the montage and all that good stuff, I re-listened to the part where, because, again, as we know, he went through every player. I went back through the part about Channing Frye. Nope, he doesn't mention anything about how Frye was acquired by giving up one of his favorite all-time teammates in Varejão. That did not come up because I was thinking, wait, will that come up when he mentions Channing Frye? No, it did not.
No, it did not. And it's understandable. Again, I'm okay with that. But like I said, it would have been cool. And by the way, didn't Blatt coach exactly half the games? Wasn't he 30-11?
Yes.
41 games
yep.
in an 82 schedule.
Yep.
It would have been easy to say the first half Coach Blatt got us in position and the second half Coach Lou took us home. It would have been very cool. But I'm okay that he didn't.
Right.
Because Blatt isn't there. But Dan Gilbert is standing right next to him. Dan Gilbert is in the parade. Dan Gilbert is paying for the parade. Dan Gilbert is the owner of the club and not a mention. All right. I don't want to beat it to death, even though we maybe just did for the last 10 or 15 minutes, but it's just a really interesting dynamic there. I've never seen an owner and a superstar that distant from one another in a post-game championship celebration and, of course, in a 2 or 3 day later post-season parade, championship parade. I've never seen that kind of distance or that kind of shade being thrown one way and the other. Hey, I want to remind you again before we take a timeout, get on the website, 1065theticket.com. You got needs this summer? You got recreational desires? You want to go to you want to get a great deal on golf? If you want to get a great deal on a vacation, you want to get a great deal on if you got yard work that you want to get done, riding mowers, if you got, basically what I'm saying is you name the product or service that you are in need of as we get into the summer, you can get a great deal on said product and service from my Toledo auction on 1065theticket.com right now. Just get to the website, Take a look, register. You got to register your name, then you can start bidding. The site is live now, and you can start bidding on tremendous items and end up paying pennies on the dollar by the time the auction ends on Monday at 11 o'clock. Pennies on the dollar because of the great clients and customers and business partners that we are with who are offering you these tremendous opportunities. So check out these wonderful patrons of ours and take advantage of pennies on the dollar deals that you can get by bidding at the My Toledo Auction on 1065theticket.com. Let's get a quick timeout, come right back, and finish this bad boy off on ESPN 1065.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 1065 The Ticket.
Indeed, and we are wrapping it up here very, very quickly on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Mike Miller standing by and awaiting the opportunity to bring drive time to you. A couple of stories before we go that we wanted to touch on. Jim, we hit it a little bit earlier with Sean Corp from DetroitBadBoys.com. Andre Drummond will not be playing for the Olympic team in Rio de Janeiro this coming summer in August. Drummond's selection, and this is from Sean's actual story, Drummond's selection seemed inevitable after serving as a final cut on the 08 squad with a number of high-profile big men backing out. However, Mark Stein of ESPN reports that Team USA is turning for big man help to Clippers big man DeAndre Jordan, who for some inexplicable reason, by the way, was first-team All-NBA this past season.
Because they still have a center position.
Exactly. But it's, don't get me going on that. Mark Stein says, with sources saying Detroit's Andre Drummond is not playing, Team USA needed another big man and is turning to the Clippers Jordan. Now, does that mean Andre Drummond said no and he didn't want to play and that's why? Stein's kind of making it look like they turned to Jordan out of necessity. And that's what Sean points out. The wording of the tweet is a little funky. It appears to imply Drummond turned down the opportunity and took Jordan as a plan B. But there is no evidence coming from either Drummond or the Pistons that there was reluctance in having Drummond play. Just 2 days ago, Stan Van Gundy talked about his plans for ensuring Drummond received coaching and worked on the fundamentals of his game during his possible Olympic commitment. In fact, just yesterday, Sean writes, Drummond posted on Facebook that he was looking forward to USA Basketball Olympics. So something is weird there. Now it seems like Drummond will have the summer off. I'm not going to lie, writes Sean Corp of Detroit Bad Boys. This sucks. It's not like Drummond was passed over in fear of a hack-a-Dre situation, considering Jordan is making the team, and they do hack-a-DeAndre, too. At this point, it's unclear if he was simply leaped by what Team USA considers the superior player in Jordan, or, as Stein's tweet indicates, if either Drummond or the Pistons were uncomfortable with his participation, considering the importance of this offseason. Drummond is in line to sign a massive maximum contract that'll pay him north of $120 million. The deal will be signed after Detroit concludes the offseason shopping, but that starts July 1st, and Drummond's deal will be signed before Team USA competition begins, so we'll see more as this develops. So I'm just going to say it again. Whether he was passed over or he decided not to go, it's all coming up roses for DeAndre or for Andre Drummond. I don't know why. Would Jim, if you had free tickets, free airfare, and free hotel stay, would you go to Rio with the hundreds of thousands of people who are going to descend on that town that is already a place where violence is just a fact of life? I mean, they just had two Paralympic athletes robbed at gunpoint a couple of days ago as they're there training, and they were from Australia. And that's got the Australian team saying, we need the Olympic-level security that's going to be here now. Because everybody there is a target. And it's just acknowledged that violence in Rio, while all those people are there, is going to be a part of life. You also hear about the water quality being beyond disgusting. And we're not talking about drinking. We're talking about swimming in. We're talking about rowing in. We're talking about diving in. We're talking about anything that are water sports. The bacteria level is extraordinarily high because they lack the same sort of sewage treatment system, if you will, that they have in other developed countries like this one.
Honestly, for me, I've been thinking about this because, you know, there's been a lot of athletes in different sports that have basically said, you know, no, I'm not actually going to do the Rio thing. You mentioned Rory earlier.
Yeah, Rory,
Pau Gasol
McElroy,
is not
going to
play for Team Spain because of this. To me, it's not even the violence part that you're talking about. It's the water and that whole Zika thing. That thing is messed up.
I didn't even get to the Zika virus.
Yeah. That to me is the, that and the water are the main reasons that, that for me, if I was like, you can go to the Olympics, it'll cost you nothing. Nah, I think I'm gonna pass. And it's honestly for me, it'd be based on the water thing and the Zika thing.
Yeah, I mean, well, to me, it's all four of them put together. There are three of them, I should say. You know, the violence, because you're going to be a target. The Zika virus, which, of course, is horrific. It is leading to so many birth defective children and pregnant women and men, you know, who are fathers. If they are contracted this, they're producing babies who have all kinds of problems. It's just a terrible thing. And then here's the release on the study. Now, this is, what is today, the 24th? This is
23rd.
This is 12 days ago. June 11th, Washington Post report. Studies reveal drug-resistant superbacteria in Rio Olympics water venues. And you know what that you know what that bacteria comes from? Runoff waste initiated at local hospitals and houses. That means flushable water. That means human waste is filling the water venues that the athletes are going to have to compete in. And they can't even kill the bacteria because it's so super drug-resistant. I mean, that. Who, you know what? If I'm Andre Jordan, or Drummond, I mean, I always do it. DeAndre Jordan and Andre Drummond. If I'm either one of those guys, I'm like, no, send somebody else. I ain't going.
Or although I'm going to say this, Bob, Andre Drummond's not going. Here's what you do now for your rest of your offseason. You call Rick Barry immediately and have you teach him the underhanded free throw. I'm dead serious. I've been thinking about this for 2 months. It's probably the only thing that would actually fix a guy like that free. I mean, if he does that, comes out shooting 60%, it'd be like he'd hit 90%.
Well, you know
honestly.
What?
He just has to get over the fact that everyone, for obvious reasons, will make fun of him at the start of this thing, but I've been thinking about it for 2 months. That's what Andre Drummond has to do to improve his free throw. Hire Rick Barry, teach the underhanded shot.
Jim, that's the code that Stan Van Gundy was talking about. When they said Stan Van Gundy talked about plans for ensuring Drummond received coaching and worked on fundamentals of his game during his Olympic commitment. That was code for make sure he practices free throws and he's not just dunking in the Olympics. That's exactly what that was. All right, that's it. We're out of time. Miller's coming up next right here on Drive Time on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We'll see you tomorrow.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.